This is Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham. Okay, this has got to be one of the scariest things a person can hear. You have cancer. And maybe you've heard that in your life or in the life of a close friend or relative. If you've not, you can imagine the anxiety and the other likely psychological issues to accompany that cancer diagnosis and all that goes with it. There is a subspecialty of oncology called psycho-oncology, and here to talk about how that works are Michelle Reba, Associate Director of the University of Michigan Depression Center, and Bill Howe, who is a cancer survivor and found psycho-oncology treatment helpful. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for inviting us.
Dr. Reba, I read that this idea originated as far back as the mid-1970s, but it wasn't fully embraced for a while. If a cancer patient was struggling back then, what did healthcare professionals do before psycho-oncology?
Well, it was very difficult. A lot of doctors, physicians, oncologists didn't necessarily ask about psychiatric issues, and patients and families didn't understand that they could ask and then get treatment for it. And so this subspecialty grew to what it is today.
So tell me how it works today then.
Well, I can tell you what it works at our cancer center, the University of Michigan Comprehensive Cancer Center, where we have an embedded psychiatric clinic right at the cancer center, and all patients who receive their care at our cancer center are entitled to be evaluated and treated, and it's just a wonderful opportunity and an ease of access for our patients and practitioners.
Is there automatic screening for everyone who gets a diagnosis of cancer?
Yes. The American College of Surgeons Commission on Cancer and the National Comprehensive Cancer Network have developed guidelines for patients in the United States. And at our cancer center, we regularly screen for distress. And then based on that information and those guidelines, then patients are triaged further.
Mr. Howe, I'd like you to tell me, if you would, when did you learn you had cancer? Can you tell me about that time?
Certainly. I got the diagnosis of when I had a PA sample taken by my general practitioner.
Which, if you're a guy, you know that's your prostate measurement.
Yes, yeah, and it's a very good test. And I was about 55 years of age, and the PSA was very high. And subsequently, I had surgery, and the unfortunate part of it was the surgery didn't get all the cancer. It was outside the prostate. And so that became the major issue for me.
Now, that becomes the scarier part, because a lot of guys are walking around with prostate cancer, but not outside, not once it's left. So was that the point it really hit you? Or?
Yes, I think it becomes overwhelming, because I think you start to think about, first of all, this is it. Am I going to continue my life or am I not? And then you start asking yourself the questions about, what about my family? You know,
That's something I want to get to a little further. I want to talk about that, because I can't imagine you're thinking about what's going to become of my kids, my wife. Are they going to be okay? And all those things. But I want to get back to how this felt to you. I mean, what was your gut feeling when you found this out?
My initial feeling was extreme anxiety. Being diagnosed with cancer, you start asking yourself a lot of questions, and there are a lot of questions, but very few answers.
Did the depression start slipping in suddenly, or did it just build up over time? Tell me about how you experienced that.
Well, I believe that initially I had extreme anxiety, and then you morph into a major depression disorder in my case. And it was during the treatment where I received, after surgery, I received chemotherapy, radiation, and hormone therapy. And it was during that time that it just became so apparent that I was in serious trouble.
Mm-hmm. So for somebody who's never had depression, how would you describe it?
I would describe it as a situation where the first thing you ask yourself is, why me? The second thing you say to yourself, what is this going to mean? But from a realistic or kind of a simply stated point of view, it's you're in a black hole. Nothing's pleasurable. You want to sleep all the time. You have a feeling that you're never going to get out, and that there is no successful treatment or anything you can do to help yourself.
Tell me how soon, where did you get help?
Well, it was fortunate enough. I had my surgery not at the cancer center, but my follow-up care was at the University of Michigan Comprehensive Cancer Center. And I was fortunate enough to have Dr. Pienta, who is a national expert on prostate cancer, treat me. And he, when we went through the various stages, and today it's in remission, and that's where I hope it stays.
How did you get the treatment for depression? Where did you find help for
that? Well, it was during this time that it became very apparent that I wasn't, it was getting worse, and I wasn't able to handle it. And that's so unusual for me. I've had a successful career. I've done many things in my life, and to have this happen to me and all of a sudden become so weak that I can't find a way out was very, very scary, frankly. And so I got referred to Dr. Reba and started care with her during my treatments, and really was a difference.
What did she do that helped you the most?
I think there's a two-pronged approach. One is the medications that for depression, which are very good today. And secondly, the psychotherapy, being able to combine the medication with the counseling that you receive. And I often say it's finding a path out. And she was so good at finding a path out for me.
Dr. Reba, when somebody gets cancer and the patient, as we mentioned, is not the only one affected, the spouse, the children, people near and dear to that person are also affected. Are they screened or offered help in a situation like this?
Well, we always say that cancer is a family illness. So I always ask the patient to try to bring a significant other in to see, first of all, if they could offer us help in the loved one who has cancer, but also in themselves, because it's a real burden often on the caretaker. And then we also ask about children or other significant members of the family, how they're doing. We want to make sure that children, too much burden isn't being put on them. We want to make sure that the family can stay intact and help one another.
How common is it that cancer patients end up with depression, for example, or some other mental health issue that they need care?
Well, it depends on the stage of cancer, the type of cancer, how old the person is, and other co-occurring medical conditions. But in general, one can think about 50% of patients during the course of their cancer care will have a diagnosable psychiatric condition. Now, that can be anxiety, depression, substance abuse, personality issues, delirium. But you can think about 50% of patients will have it. Now, what we're most interested in is the functionality and the quality of life of patients. So we want to help patients who have had a history of a psychiatric problem, treat that. We want to make sure we can prevent certain conditions and help people through their care. Many of these psychiatric issues and conditions are very, very treatable, as they were in Bill's case.
How often does a cancer treatment hospital or unit actually have psycho-oncology? Is that a fairly common thing these days, or is that still fairly rare?
I think most of the major cancer centers throughout the country have some form of a psycho-oncology program. And psychiatrists and oncologists in the community are very much aware of this, because we know that there are interactions between chemotherapy agents and treatments that psychiatrists have to be aware of, and vice versa.
Mr. Howe, you were still trying to work while dealing with cancer and anxiety. How did that work out?
Not very well. You find yourself focusing on cancer probably 90% of the time and work 10% of the time. When you first get diagnosed and you start to get this overwhelming feeling of what's going to happen to my wife. I mean, first of all, have we saved enough so she can be taken care of? What about my two sons or my grandchildren? Am I all done with them, seeing their life grow as it has in the past? And I think that when you come to understanding that there are no easy answers. That's the most scary part of it. But it becomes so overwhelming that all you're doing is researching in your mind answers to questions that have very few answers.
Dr. Ribefort, a lot of people work or activities are their self-identity. I mean, what do you do when you can't function at work anymore because you're so distracted by the disease that might kill you?
I think those are some of the very difficult situations and problems that we have to negotiate with people. Years ago, you asked earlier about in the 1970s. Years ago, we used to help people stop working very early, and we've learned that helping people continue to work if that's what they choose to do and depending on the type of job they have and work they have is sometimes very therapeutic. So how to think about that and negotiate that, and some jobs are easier than others to work part-time or to have a reduced work schedule. But for many of us, work is our identity. That's who we think of when we, you know, what do you do is often a very important question. And so when that changes because of an illness or a rigorous treatment schedule is sometimes very difficult for people. In addition, the finances of having cancer are very problematic. Sometimes people have to go on disability and you know, at an early age, and they have mortgages and tuitions. And so what does that mean? Maybe the other significant other has to go back to work. And then what about the children and savings? And so
– yeah, it spirals out of control after
yes,
a while.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So those are important issues, and how do we help people through the survivorship is also an important aspect of this.
Bill, I want to ask you if you know, maybe you've met someone close to you that's been diagnosed with cancer. I mean, what do you tell them? Or if you had the opportunity to tell somebody, what would you tell them?
Well, in my situation, I was quite close. I had two brothers die of cancer, one of large cell lymphoma and one from bladder cancer. And since that time and since my treatment, I try to talk to as many people as I can about the value of the medication, about the value of the therapy and the counseling together, because one is left hand, one is right hand, and together you need them both. And I think that trying to convey this to people I run into from time to time, which has happened quite often, more often than I'd like to see, but and it's worked out very successfully.
That's Bill Halm. He is one of the patients of Dr. Reba and a cancer survivor. Michelle Reba is associate director at the University of Michigan Depression Center. Thanks for coming in and telling us about psycho-oncology.
Thank you.
Thank you.